हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 51. Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, Previously they saw the footprints, but because they were bewildered by prema, it was as if they did not see them, since they could not look closely. Therefore they did not follow those footprints. Now, slightly recovering because of imitating with absorption, their intelligence arose. They now saw what they previously could not recognize. Thus the affix V is added to indicate special seeing. Right, so this V doesn't necessarily mean that it's down, it can also be up. Like V-karma can mean that it's down from karma, right? But also Vigyan means it's up, right? So it just means it's special, which whether it's special good or special bad, now that's another thing. But in any case, you know it's special. They saw the footprints of he who is dearest, Paramatmanaha. Even though it was night, they could recognize his footprints by their characteristics. Because it's not a whole lot of people have, you know, chakras and chariots and all that stuff on their feet. Anyone know what all the wood's for? Mm-hmm. The wood, the firewood.
Oh. I guess for cooking they transfer.
Cooking? Huh? Some serious cooking. So after everybody goes and they close the goshala, then the cows all get out and they start up a barbecue and all that. Like that. Making paneer tikkas and stuff. Yeah, okay.
I think there's a wedding there tomorrow.
But this wood has been going now for weeks. Okay, verses 25 to 33, the gopis follow Krishna's footprints. The gopis said, The marks of a flag, lotus, thunderbolt, elephant goad, barleycorn, and so forth on these footprints clearly distinguish them as belonging to that great soul, the son of Nanda Maharaj. The BBT purport states, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on this verse, gives the following scriptural information about the symbolic markings on the lotus feet of Krishna. In the following verses, the Skanda Purana states the particular places on his feet where Krishna carries the mark of the flag and also other marks, and the reasons for these marks. At the base of the large toe on his right foot, the unborn Lord carries the mark of a disc, which cuts down the six mental enemies of his devotees. At the bottom of the middle toe, of the same foot, Lord Achyuta has a lotus flower, which increases greed for him in the minds of the bee-like devotees who meditate on his feet. At the base of his small toe is a thunderbolt, which smashes the mountains of his devotees' reactions to past sins. And in the middle of his heel is the mark of an elephant goad, which brings the elephants of his devotees' minds under control. The joint of his right large toe bears the mark of a barleycorn, representing all kinds of enjoyable opulences. Okay, so that's the difference between the base and the joint. The joint is just where it meets, and so at that point you'll see like this double line that's in a shape like a barleycorn. A thunderbolt is found on the right side of his right foot. and an elephant goad below that. The acharyas of the Vaishnav Sampradaya explained that since the particular feet under discussion are Lord Krishna's, we should know that the thunderbolt is at the base of his small toe, and the elephant goad below the thunderbolt. An elephant goad on the heel belongs rather to Lord Narayana and other Vishnu Tattva expansions. Thus, the Skanda Puran describes six marks on Krishna's right foot: the disc, flag, lotus, thunderbolt, elephant gold, goad, and barleycorn. And the Vaishnav Toshani mentions even more marks: a vertical line beginning at the middle of his foot and continuing as far as the juncture between his big toe and second toe, an umbrella below the disc at the base of the middle of his foot, a group of four swastikas in the four cardinal directions at the four points where each swastika meets the next, four rose apples. Okay, wait a minute. Okay, no. At the four points where each swastika meets the next, four rose apples. And in the middle of the swastikas, an octagon. This makes 11 marks on Krishna's right foot. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti describes the marks on Krishna's left foot as follows: at the base of the large toe is a conch shell with his mouth facing the toe. At the base of the middle toe are two concentric circles representing the inner and outer sky. Below this mark is Cupid's unstrung bow. At the base of the bow is a triangle, and surrounding the triangle is a group of four water pots. At the base of the triangle is a half moon with two more triangles touching its points, and below the half moon is a fish. Altogether, there are 19 distinguishing marks on the soles of Lord Krishna's lotus feet. So then, by meditating upon Krishna's feet, then all auspiciousness is gained. One is one gets that attraction to Krishna, and any obstacles against those attractions are also removed.
Maharaj, is there commentary on the meanings of all the symbols?
Didn't we just have it?
Well, I mean, they're saying with what all...
Oh, with some of them. He'd be amused about the rest of them.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure. I've seen books on just the lotus feet, but...
Padasevanam, there is a book with
Padasevanam.
Padasevanam, it talks about all the characteristics of the lotus feet of Krishna.
Padasevanam.
Whose book is that?
It's from the BBT.
Oh.
You can ask for by its name, Padasevanam.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, BBT Padasevanam. Okay, but as mentioned here is that it makes the difference in that the elephant goad, instead of being in the middle of the heel, like it is on Lord Narayan, with Krishna, it's under the little toe, you know, under the, what's there, the flag, or what was there?
The
elephant goad.
The elephant goad is below the thunderbolt.
Thunderbolt.
Under the thunderbolt, okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The gopis began following Krishna's path, as shown by his many footprints. But when they saw that these prints were thoroughly intermixed with those of his dear mosque consort, they became perturbed and spoke as follows." Footnote 20. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 26 to Bhagavad Arkamrichimala, chapter 20, entitled "The Sweetness of Rasa, Rasa Mahurima," which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So that absorption in Krishna, that attachment to Krishna, then will produce these kinds of feelings. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, "Because Krishna was carrying Radha, her footprints were not visible in the beginning. After some distance, they saw those footprints. They were weak, abalaha, because of separation and searching. But still, they followed his path. The consort was Radha, since she will be established as the most fortunate of all," right? Because that's what this whole part of the pastime is about, establishing Radharani's position. Right? Means they're getting purified from the false ego they have. A part of the false, not false ego, but just the pride that they have. Because they see themselves as servant of Krishna. So it's not false ego, it's just pride. But to reduce that, then they become absorbed in Krishna, then that purifies that aspect, their love for Krishna deepens. But at the same time, they have to understand the fortune of Radharani for this all to work nicely. The gopis said, and as it said before, the ones that were disturbed when this happened were the rival groups. Radharani's group is happy that she's there, but they were mentioned before. But it mentioned that these ones coming up, the rival group, then they see in this way. And the gopis said, here we see the footprints of some gopi who must have been walking along with the son of Nanda Maharaj. He must have put his arm on her shoulder, just as an elephant rests his trunk on the shoulder of an accompanying Sri elephant. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, they all spoke. They understood the other footprints were those of a woman because of the softer impressions, since she was lighter in weight. They did not say Krishna's name directly out of anger as previously. They recognized the footprints of some woman. Her arm was placed on his shoulder. Though this created particular pleasure, he did this so that he could quickly lead her off easily, since she was stumbling in the dark. And this shows his great affection for her. They are compared to a pair of elephants, since the two wander together out of desire and affection. The gopis favorable to Srimati Radharani's camp said, certainly this particular gopi has perfectly worshipped the all-powerful personality of Godhead, Govinda, since he was so pleased with her that he abandoned the rest of us and brought her to a secluded place. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Those gopis in the Surid Paksha, such as Lalita, recognized the footprints of Radha, and deep within were satisfied. But in the group of gopis, they pretended not to recognize those footprints. They began to speak with joy for her good fortune without mentioning her name. So they're glorifying Radharani in front of the others, but not mentioning her name. Right, as if it must be some gopi. They know who it is, but they're just saying as if it's some gopi and pointing out her position, her glories, and all that. Because you don't want to start a riot. Quote, certainly Narayana, Bhagavan, who takes away the sorrow of the devotees, who is capable of bestowing all desires on the devotees, has been worshipped by this fortunate woman. Not by us, for giving us up, he has run away alone with her. In this statement, the name of Radha is revealed, Aradhita. In the Puranas, the name Radhika means one who satisfies the desires of Krishna by worship. That's the meaning. So, whenever we see that word used in these suitable situations, it's referring to Radharani. But, since it's a general word of worship, then some will understand that, some won't. And so who should understand it does, and who shouldn't doesn't. So better like that. And if somebody does catch it and they saw this, I'm just talking about it's generic. Yes.
It seems that the opposition also knows that it's Srimati Radharani.
Yes, but they may not speak it. Otherwise, you know, one, they may be upset in general just because he left all of them. Okay, he left everybody, then what can you do? But he left everybody except one, then there's going to be some feeling of rivalry. But because Radharani's camp understands that it's Radharani, they feel very happy. But they don't show it. They just talk in general terms like that. Sukadeva Goswami has carefully mentioned her name secretly here, but in other places, by Radha's mercy, her name flows spontaneously from his moonlight mouth in various Upanishads. Right? And here, then, it's not, because the Upanishads, it depends who he's talking to, because Sukadeva Goswami is talking to Maharaj Parikit. He only has 7 days. Suta Goswami is talking to the sages at Naimisharanya. So there you have plenty of time. Right. So it can take how it doesn't say that Suta Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam in 7 days to the sages at Naimisharanya. Doesn't say that because they're doing a yagya, so they'll fit it in between their yagyas, right? But here then this is all that's spoken for 7 days straight because there's no need of eating or sleeping or drinking here, so. You know how you say, only those with the appropriate adhikar then are attending this recitation. So then in other places, then he's able to say her name more directly. But in here, then this is that one time where he just says her name, Araditaha, right? That is always talked about and all the Gaudiyas will get all excited when they mention it and that. So this is the one. Like that. Another meaning of this verse is as follows. O unfortunate gopis, Ananya, uselessly you are thinking yourselves equal to that fortunate woman. and are wandering around thinking yourselves mistreated. Yeah, so this problem of thinking that you're the victim and you deserve to be the center of attention, this has been going on for a long time.
And it's useless.
Huh? And it's useless, yeah. So it's totally politically incorrect, but this is the fact. Exactly like it says, it is a fact, that's the next thing, Nunam, that Hari has obtained Radha at this place, Radhita. This handsome person, full of lust, proclaiming his own glories, Bhagavan, who is capable of cheating you, Ishwara, because he has given us up, Yanno Vihaya, is skillful at giving pleasure to all the senses of that woman, Govinda, with a satisfied heart, Pritaha, he has taken her off alone. So Krishna, in his own pleasure, has taken Radharani, and now they are spending time together. And all the other gopis, that they're all so worried about themselves and this and that, then it's basically a waste of time because this is the glorious position that actually is there. But it doesn't mean that through this process of them going, they're absorbing themselves in Krishna, they're remembering Krishna, so then that is the perfect aspect, and that will bring them to the point of understanding and being more absorbed in Krishna. So two things are going on here. One is the becoming qualified to be able to take part in the Lord's pastimes very nicely by coming to that proper platform of prema, right? The other thing is then you have the nature of the pastimes themselves and the rivalry, right? The two different aspects. One is on the tattva, just getting up to the position where you're qualified. And the other is then within the rasa, how it will unfold. Does this make sense? So you're going to have both of these aspects there. So when the acharyas give these points, this is talking about the rasa aspect. So it's not that they're saying it's useless that they're absorbed in Krishna and imitating his glories and doing... No, they're not talking about that, because they're all doing that. The point is that they're thinking, oh, he's left us, and you know, and he's with this other, and this is unfair, and this is improper, and we love him so much. That they're saying, that's useless, because he loves this one more. Right? So if we see ourselves as servants of this gopi, then everything works perfectly. And so there are those who are in that mood, and others to enhance the parakeya aspect, then they don't take that mood. But that's their service. But it doesn't mean that they don't get comments like this as part of the interaction. Is that... Yeah? In Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Ujjwala Nilamani, Radha's foot markings are mentioned as follows. At the base of the big toe of the left foot is a mark of a barley grain. Below that, a chakra, and below that, an umbrella. Below that is a bracelet. There is a line starting from between the big toe and the next toe to the middle of the sole. Right, so you see there's a lot of these markings are the same, just they'll be reversed. Because that's just the nature of how the masculine and feminine symptoms are. What's on the right side in the male will be in the left side on the female. Below the middle toe is a lotus. Below that, a flag with a staff. Below the flag is a creeper and flower. Below the little toe is an ankusha. At the bottom of the heel is a half moon. Thus there are 11 marks on the left foot. At the base of the big toe of the right foot is a conch, right? Because his was on the left, right? And his barley corn was on the right, hers is on the left, right? And below that, a club. Below the little toe is an altar. And below that, an earring. Below that is a spear. Below the first toe and the others is a mountain. Below the mountain, a rock. And on the heel, a fish. There are 8 marks on the right. The total is 19. Right? And Krishna also was 19, right? Huh? Yeah. So many are the same, and in the same basic places in their counterparts, and then some are unique. The neutral gogi. Yeah.
It's just...
No, it's fine. I was just saying...
I'm not sure, but in many traditions, the fish somehow is important, and we see... We have them here. So what's the importance of the fish?
Fish are considered auspicious. Okay. So it's just like in one of the things, if you're doing the outside programs with any kind of pond pastimes.
Yeah.
Like the boat pastimes, or the deity goes out and sits, you know, let's say they have a pond, but where he'll sit. But it's you can get there by bridge. You don't have to take a boat and all that. So there may be just a place where things will happen, a festival. It's just a nice place to sit, like in the summer, to be there amongst water. The water is a little cooling and stuff like that. So then one of the elements that they do is called matsyamochana. They have a fish, like, you know, they'll have it in a bucket or something, and then they let it go into the pond. And so that's considered a very auspicious thing, right? So the Vedic thing, they let fish go for the festival, and for everywhere else in the world, they catch them. And so it's not as auspicious, right? Yeah. So letting them go, not sushi, is auspicious. Okay. Yeah, but more than that, then I'm not sure. The Lord comes as Matsya, so it's one of the ones, it's one of his main ones, so.
In China, the fish is the symbol of sex.
Fish is the symbol of sex.
Yeah.
So they're following in the line of Saubari Muni. Well, I guess somebody has to follow, right? Yeah, but if you look at that, even you take it like that, the whole world, the whole three worlds are controlled by sex. So therefore, then it's a major feature in the material world.
Yeah.
Any way you look at it, whether you're looking at it as auspiciousness or what is considered auspicious, you know, so. Oh, yes, we're on the next page. You good? Yeah. The neutral gopis said, "O girls, the dust of Govinda's lotus feet is so sacred that even Brahma, Shiva, and goddess Rama take that dust upon their heads to dispel sinful reactions." So the neutral mean they can function on either side. They're not worried. The neutral gopis, Tatastapaksha, who were inattentive to what the friends of Radha knew, seeing the footprints of Krishna, then spoke. Blessed is the dust of Krishna's feet, for Brahma and Shiva hold that dust on their heads in order to remove the sorrow and suffering. Every day in the morning when Krishna comes from the cow pens with his friends, they are seen coming down from Swarga to take the foot dust of Krishna on their heads. This is mentioned in 10:35-21:22. It is seen that the devas offer obeisances to Krishna's foot dust, but we cannot because the restraints of modesty. Because of this, we sink further into sin. Right? So the gopis are feeling bad because even the devatas come and get the dust, but they can't because of their modesty. They can't go out, people will see, and things like that. Then the gopis from a rival camp said, "These footprints of that special gopi greatly disturb us. Of all the gopis, she alone was taken away to a secluded place, where she is enjoying the lips of Krishna. Look, we can't see her footprints over here. It's obvious that the grass and sprouts were hurting the tender soles of her feet, and so the lover lifted up his beloved."
Maharaj, is this rival group displaying the mana feature of Prem, the third one? Because
they're jealous. It's jealous anger.
Yeah, jealous anger. So that's Manu over here, that is. So.
Generally, we bring out the element of Man when it's interacting with Krishna. That's generally the point they bring it out. Here, it's just the jealousy of Radharani. So we don't take it as something very special.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right? You have to know where to apply it. Does that make sense? It's just like your good friends are laughing and happy. You call that happiness. The people you don't like are laughing and happy. You don't call that happiness. You understand? So therefore, it may be technically there, but the point is it's indirect, and so because it's aimed at Radharani, so it's not aimed at Krishna. So the point is, since we're taking Man as an aspect of prema, then we're generally looking at the direct aspects. So the point is Radharani is being upset that Krishna is with another gopi. That then we would call man. Because her point is that how will Krishna be happy with that other gopi? Right? Because she, not being the Sarup Shakti, can't fully satisfy Krishna. So how is Krishna being satisfied? He's just according to his position that he's taken the vow that however someone interacts with him, he'll reciprocate. So therefore he's having to reciprocate. But in actuality, he's not pleased by that. So in her mind, it's not actually service. You understand? So her dealings, that we would call man. These others, we wouldn't call that man, because then it's directed at Radharani. So we generally avoid that. You understand? So technically, yes. You know, it's just like, okay, someone is taking a steak and dropping it into a frying pan. Do we call that frying? We call that nonsense. So it may be technically frying, but it's not something that we would categorize that way. You know, you take the pan, you take some ghee, you drop in some cauliflowers, then we call it frying. You understand? So it's just a matter of understanding the flavor. Otherwise, why bring this out? Because we're not just talking about the generic aspects here.
Because the favorite of the gopis, you know, when they were imitating Krishna, you know, the different stems and all, and that was in the stage of pranayama, where they were.
Yes.
Because that was directed towards Krishna.
Yes, yes. But it's not that this is not from that feature, but the point is we would consider it misdirected. It's necessary for the pastime, so they're very fortunate to be able to take up the position, and they're only doing it underlying to please Srimati Radharani and Krishna. But the point is in the unfolding of the pastimes, it's dealt with in this other way. We have to catch these things to be able to separate. Does that make sense? Yeah. In this verse, the opposing group of gopis, Pratipraksha, speak. The footprints of this woman give us great sorrow. She has stolen the lips of a chuta, which should be enjoyed by all us gopis, and is drinking those lips by herself alone. Right? But if they were alone and no one else, they wouldn't have a problem. So, yeah. Bringing Krishna under control by some unknown pious acts, she has made him reject us. Who are filled with prema and taken him far away. So now they blame her that she's the one that took Krishna away. Right? So what pious act she did that she got this? So they're recognizing that much. So in this way, they're indirectly glorifying Radharani. But directly, they don't. The gopis continue. Please observe, my dear gopis, how in this place, lusty Krishna's footprints are pressed more deeply into the ground. Carrying the weight of his beloved must have been difficult for him. And over here, that intelligent boy must have put her down to gather some flowers. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, the opposing group speaks with envy. O gopis, being clever, you can see this. Krishna is impelled by lust, kaminaha, not by cleverness, arising from the rasas of prema. When Radha's friends speak, she was put down here by the crest jewel of clever lovers. Right, so it's two different groups here speaking. So that's why it says the gopis continue. So only the acharyas, they can tell who's who and who's speaking. So that's the... We have to take that. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds, O gopis afflicted with the great sickness of envy, do not lament. Here we do not see that woman's footprints. With this intention... Lalita speaks, here we do not see Radha's footprints. Other Shakis, looking with crooked glances of bliss at Lalita, say to her after discussion amongst themselves. Embracing her with his two arms, he has lifted her to his chest, because being most dear to him, he could not bear the pain to her tender feet. By this, Radha gave the Shakis two types of bliss, the happiness arising from seeing her good fortune, and the happiness arising from seeing the sorrow of the competing gopis, Vipaksha. Right? So, both kinds of happiness are there. Like that. The gopis continue, "Just see how in this place dear Krishna collected flowers for his beloved. Here he has left the impressions of only the front part of his feet, because he was standing on his toes to reach the flowers." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "The disappearance of her footprints gives some sorrow, gives more sorrow than seeing the footprints." So again, the disappearance of the light then brings the sorrow of... Okay, no, it's just, well, it means you look yourself, but more is look at so it work goes on. It illuminates your book rather than my, how you say, retinas. So in this, we have to see is that it's about the taste of the rasas that's going on. It's not about the mechanics. The mechanics are there to bring out what various aspect is there. But it's about the taste that's being gained. It's just like, let's say we're discussing a recipe. Something's been cooked very nicely. And we appreciate the taste. Then by discussing the mechanics of it, it brings out the taste. Right? So by... pointing out, that this particular thing and that and so many different aspects that are there that make for the excellence of the recipe, right? And therefore the excellence of the taste. That's one discussion. Another one is just getting down and so it's cooked like this, it's cooked like that, but it's not about the taste that's being getting, it's about the mechanics of it. So that actually ruins the mood. Does that make sense? So you have to be able to distinguish between the two. They both basically look the same, but they're very different. One is trying to take rasa down to mechanics. The other is showing the mechanics to increase the rasa. Does this make sense? So, we see the acharyas, then they're adding these technical points to increase the taste that's there. So we can't get distracted by those and take those as the main. Like that. So, yes?
So before the level of ruchi, actually... we work on the mechanics as such. And then at ruchi,
yes,
we have certain experience of taste, not before that.
Yes. But that ruchi is there all the way through, but it's just when it becomes a particular volume, then like what you're saying. But otherwise, someone's taken up chanting and joined Krishna consciousness because of some taste. Because even a drop of that ocean of bliss is greater than that ocean of poison that's there in the material world. So one can see that difference. So it's always there. So it's not that before ruchi no one has a taste. Some aspects are there. That's the nice thing is that when Prabhupada brings it, when in the Krishna book, when Prabhupada explains this, it maintains the taste, even though he's explaining what's going on in all this. Right? But so Prabhupada's writing for everyone. So if you're qualified, you'll like it. If you're not qualified, you'll like it. But the acharyas, they're basically writing for those who are qualified. So then when they mention these things, it's supposed to be added on to that other taste. Then it enhances that. But otherwise, we can get distracted. That's why then seeing the approaching the purports of the acharyas through Prabhupada's Krishna book, that's actually the process that Rupa Goswami says. Then we'll be able to appreciate it. So if we catch that mood that Prabhupada gives and then add on to it these little finer details, then it becomes very nice. Like that. So in that way, then, even though we don't have the qualification, we get some taste.
Yeah, because it seems that on the level of sadhana, there's one taste, then on the bhav, there's a different taste, and on the prem, it's a completely different, because on the first level of beginner, we compare our taste with the previous experience. We don't have any other. So that's how it's moving.
Yes. But here, it means the bhava just means this, once you start with, like you said, with ruchi, then you're dealing with the same taste. It's just the volume of it. So ruchi, it means you have a taste, but it's not enough that's developed attachment. Then with time, that develops attachment, but that's still not enough that it develops the ecstasy. Then when it develops ecstasy, but then it has to develop prema. So that taste is there, that rati is there, that attraction. But it's just when it comes to its mature state, then it takes on the position of prema.
So, because we've seen even in Kirtan or Bhagavatam, the people experience more like a group experience than the Bhagavatam or Kirtan itself. It's all about the group and how I'm a part of the group. And we see it with the gopis, but it's a different because Krishna is always in the center. Mm. But then we lose that center, and then it becomes something different.
Yeah, then it's about, you know, how you drink your bottle of water while playing mridanga at the same time.
And perspiring.
And perspiring, yes. And like that. Yeah, you know, so those fine, important details are after years of practice and training, yes. Yeah, basically it just comes down to the pride of it. So it's the same problem that happened. It's just that we'll use the Marwari saying here, a shallow stream floods quickly. So for them, this ocean of rasa that's going on, then at that point they become proud. But for us, just a little bit, you know, just a little bit of taste and then we're so proud. So therefore, it's the same principle. Krishna then, as Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book, when that pride comes up, Krishna doesn't appreciate that, so then he deals with you differently. His attitude towards you is different until you drop the pride. Then things go back to the to normal. But he'll adjust his how he deals with you until the pride goes down. So if we are attached to that pride, maintain that pride, then, you know, Krishna just either keeps pushing or just leaves it, because that's how you want to deal, and so therefore he'll leave it like that, like he did with Indra. You know, only so much that he can, you know, understand not to be so aggressively there, but he doesn't get rid of his pride, just his pride in connection with him.
Yeah.
Right? You know, I mean, it's obvious that he shouldn't be proud, but he hasn't actually gone after his pride of being Indra, you know, and being the Lord of the Devatas. As long as he accepts the sovereignty of Krishna. Right? So he's left that part like that. So Krishna will do that also. If he sees that one can't, like I mentioned, that one senior devotee was saying, Prabhupada knew this about them and therefore never went after that point. While with others who are his peers, then Prabhupada, you know, may, you know, completely take them apart. You know, like that famous one of, you know, there's the whole cosmic creation, and then and that one comes down, and then sitting here in this room, then sitting here, and then he's thinking, you know, like that. But he wouldn't do this to the other one. Like that. So like that, then Prabhupada knows exactly how to cultivate that, because the attachment of both of them are very great. One because he would do that, the other because he wouldn't do that. You know? Does that make sense? So each has his own uniqueness. That, you know, it's like he didn't make that point to anyone else. So that was unique. At the same time as his leaving that one, that's unique. So like that, then it's that. Prabhupada knew perfectly how to cultivate and attract the devotees to Krishna. So that's, you know, because, you know, and where does that come from? From Krishna. That. So,
On that point that Prabhupada knew perfectly, and when we preach to the devotees, I mean, we're not even anywhere near the shoes of Prabhupada, but
we're not that stuff stuck on the bottom or something. Can you clean this off?
So what can we do in dealing with people, because we have to be we have to help them,
yes.
But sometimes it's quite hard to know what really helps, because sometimes you push too much, sometimes you don't push enough.
No, that's just, you just see with time. You see what's the response. You deal, see the response, then deal accordingly. So that's also the principle, is that you act according to how they're acting now, and then you see how they respond to that, then act according to that. So you keep changing as if they change. If in your dealing with them, their response means they're dealing in a particular way, you deal with that. and by your dealings with that, that particular mood remains, then you know that that works nicely. But if you see that they change the mood, or they change either for better or for worse, then you then adjust to that. If it's better, then you can continue in that line or refine it. Or if you find they're not responding, then you take another angle. So it's just a matter of being aware of how they responded, because it's, you start on something, but you have to go by how they respond. So you may have a plan, but they respond differently, just like a, so, you know, that would be the one aspect. You know, the other aspect is for ourselves, our own personal, then, it, you know, that humble, tolerant, respecting others, not looking for respect. And by with that attitude, then we can be aware, then we can do that.
Because sometimes devotees say that if they act in the capacity of kind of Shiksha Guru, it's just capacity. So then Krishna can act through the person, using that person.
Yeah, of course.
And if we get some ideas how to do that, then it might come from Krishna, or it might come from our own mind.
No, but the whole point is, or the point is if it works, it's coming from Krishna. If it's not working, that's the one that's coming from our own mind. So if you do something and it doesn't work, know that that was your own mind. And if it worked, that was Krishna. That's the easy way to tell. So that's why we see from like reading the Lilamrita, that will have on the, you know, on these books like the what do you call it, the nectar, Prabhupada nectar, you know, all the little interactions and that. Then you see different ways that Prabhupada dealt. But then you have to see the person. Don't just, you may think, okay, this may be the best way to do it. Then when you go to apply it, if it works, then you continue. If it doesn't, then you use other approaches. But the point is to get the effect that the person is drawn closer to Krishna. Like that. And if they're not, then that's not, you have to make some adjustments. Like that. And if it's that they don't have the piety to be drawn to Krishna, then the adjustment is you go into the indifference. Because means you would interact if they could accommodate, but since they can't, then you won't interact. You know, I mean, as well as the Vedic concept of indifference, means you would act or you wouldn't. Depends upon which works. So for someone who's inimical, then not interacting is the appropriate thing. You know, it's not that, oh, we could have done this, we could have done that. No, if they're inimical, it doesn't matter what you do. But that's why we're indifferent. We don't try to please the inimical. We try to not annoy them, but the point is they'll get annoyed anyway. So we don't not do what we do, because that will please them. Because what's the point of pleasing them? They're not going to become more Krishna conscious by being pleased. And materially, they're not going to be benefited either, because then they're opposing the Krishna conscious movement. So therefore, that's why you just don't interact. Right? This idea is, no, we have to please all the those who are not pleased. No, we don't. Like that. And people don't do that in their own life. People in their own life who they find is inimical towards them as a person, they avoid them. But somehow in the Krishna conscious, those are the ones we're supposed to please. But they're only trying to please that group that's not pleased, that pleases them. You understand? So according to their own conditioning, I would want this group to like me. They're not liking me, so I will make adjustments so they like me. Well, another group then will just ignore them because they wouldn't want them to be pleased anyway. So it has to be, it's about Krishna. So, yes.
Another difficulty that many senior preachers found is that nowadays, you know, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, for the general mass of the devotees, is considered boring. You have to include a certain, like a big volume of entertainment into your program, otherwise nobody's there. So, because, yeah.
Just thinking you could open with some Irish dancing or something.
Well,
yeah, open with a haka. Yeah, that would definitely get their attention. Yes. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, preach to the walls. So the point is we give Krishna, as long as you're giving straight Krishna consciousness, then more people come, less people come, we're not worried. Means we use our intelligence, how we can increase that, but we're not going to increase it for volume. This idea is that, oh no, but there's so many, but what's the quality of them? You know, it's just like on the list, Christianity is the biggest religion in the world, but what's the quality of the commitment, their surrender to the Lord?
Touch of faith. Huh? You explained it, they have a touch of faith.
A touch of faith, yeah. So it's better than not at all. But still, the point is that what Lord Chaitanya was saying? He said, in every town and village, his name will be, you know, chanted. Not in every town and village, then they're not inimical to Hare Krishnas. Like that. So therefore, we try to preach to the best that we can. Boy, guys really have nothing to do today, right? It's like, you know, how did that benefit the Bengal government by turning the current on and off for 3 seconds?
You know? Just that we know that they exist.
Yeah. It's just like a, you know, it's what do you call it? It's another 10 minutes it's seven minutes until they get off work, and so they just want to let you know that they're there and doing their job and stuff. Yeah. So it's means one has to use the intelligence, but that's why then we see how did the acharyas preach. Now, did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur have a successful mission?
Yeah.
Did Prabhupada have a successful mission?
Yeah.
Right. So that means, and they were very straightforward in their preaching.
Yeah.
And so then it works. Because this idea that things are different now, this whole kind of emergence of the middle class, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking about that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was talking about that. And they both mentioned that the emergence of the middle class, one of the main things it does is break down authority and increase atheism. So as far as we talk spiritually, it's not actually the best development. Because people in that, if they're poor, they tend to think of God. They're rich, they think of God. Because one would like to get money, the other one wants to keep the money. Right? But in between, then they just kind of, it's blasé. They just kind of go about, you know, the rat race. And so there's not much. They just get more into consumerism because they don't have the piety of the rich, but at the same time, they have a little more facility than the poor. So it's not necessarily your best for really deeply thinking about something. And generally, those who think about it think about how to break down the authority rather than to support the authority. So then there's a problem. So it's not that pleasing this emerging middle class is actually that important. Finding individuals who are interested in Krishna consciousness and would like to hear about how to improve their life, that's then what is done. But this idea is that you have to please this semi-educated middle class liberal group, as that is a preaching strategy. It's like Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't find it important to address that group. They would address whoever's interested. They don't care where they come from. They wouldn't target this group specifically. You know what I'm saying? Because it doesn't have a proliferation of those who are interested. Because they're distracted by the emerging means they're distracted by the emergence. That's the you know, things are going well, so when things are going well, people tend to forget God. You know? So they're not necessarily your best group as a target. But being able to present something that people are attracted, that's nice. But if people aren't attracted, you still do what you should. Like that. You know, it's just the way it is. I remember, I think it was... Not Kavi Karnapur Maharaj.
Kavi Chandra
Maharaj. So I got the Kavi part, and then it says the other part would become. We're in Ujjain, he was giving the Bhagavatam class, and I think there's like two or three devotees there. And then he's, you know, because everybody's busy with the whole point, but he just said, it's my duty to do this, you know, to speak on Bhagavatam. So he's doing it. He's not thinking, oh, everybody's busy, I'm not giving class. He gives class anyway. Like that. I think there were two or three. There may have been less, but... I mean, if you count Gordy Tide, then okay. Then minimum, you know. Minimum two. Yeah. But that's the whole point. It was there, and it pleases Krishna that you're willing to speak. And then Krishna will arrange. Because if you have to use the tricks to get the crowd, then what's the point? You know?
Somebody was mentioning the concept of bridge preaching for devotees.
Bridge preaching for devotees. Need to preach to devotees and need bridge preaching. Yeah. Yes, in that case, I guess we're working with the London bridges falling down principle. Yeah. No, you just that's the thing. It's just who wants to hear about the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna. Then they'll come forward, and if they would rather see what's trending on YouTube, then they'll be doing that. You know, they're not going to. You know, it doesn't matter. You know? But if you can use some cleverness to get people there, you know, like say Jayadwaita Maharaj would come out with the most outrageous headings for his seminars and people would come, and then, you know, he would turn it around and make it into something very good. So yeah, whatever works, but it's if you have the capacity to do that, then you do that, and if not, then you don't bother, and whoever shows up, then great, and whoever doesn't show up, then, you know what I'm saying? It's just like I said, you're in Dubai at those big high-end shops, you know, like, I think it's dead now, but before the Virtu phones, you know, like most expensive phones and all that, and every time you walk by the shop, no one's in the shop, but every time you come to Dubai, the shop is there. So all they have to do is sell one phone, you know, probably a week or 10 days or 2 weeks, and the shops may, or once a month, and it's maintained. I mean, the phones there were one phone, $100,000, $120,000, you know, like that. Yeah, like that. So the point is that they're not worried about huge groups. They just need one. So in the same way in preaching, then if a group will come, nice, but more important out of that group is one. You know, there's like that one Prabhupada spoke in Sweden. Out of 300 students in the lecture hall, one became a devotee. That's perfect.
That's perfect.
Gaur Kishore Das Babaji.
Hmm?
Gaur Kishore Das Babaji.
That's his name?
Gaur Kishore Das Babaji.
Oh yes, he had just one disciple. Okay, I was just thinking. Yeah, he happened to be in Sweden at the time. They heard that they had plenty of boats, so he was sitting under the boats chanting, and then he heard, "Oh, some Vaishnavs giving class." So then, is that? So in other words, you preach, and then if you can see if by some different arrangements or where you go or whatever it is or something, then you try to improve the quality. But the main thing is this, the fourth one, purity is the force. So books are the basis, purity is the force. So as we purify ourselves by the devotional process, then we'll find that it works easier, works better.
In China.
Otherwise you can always try free snacks or something.
So devotees now in China, they focus on preaching to the yoga groups, you know, yoga. Most of them are ladies, actually. So it creates a lot of problem, actually.
Yeah, well, figure it means that you can always try to figure out, okay, where's others?
Sometimes we see like one guru, you know, initiate disciples, and all of disciples are ladies.
I mean, the ladies happen to be more religious, so they'll be more easily attracted from that religious point of view.
Yeah.
But the point is, you just have to figure out, okay, then where others are, where couples are, where men are,
yeah.
Or try the younger group. Like yeah. That. Because the yoga group, you can catch them at any age. But the younger yeah. ones, then you have to be more clever.
Yeah.
Like that. But, yeah, it's natural. It's natural women will come forward more because of the religious tendency.
Yeah.
But at the same time, as it doesn't mean that one's satisfied with just that. So those who are good at that should do that. But others that can do other things, they should do that. It shouldn't be that, oh, but you only make two or three devotees while this other one makes so many devotees, yeah. So that's better. No, it's better he goes on and does that. Because there's a good chance the yoga person can't make any devotees in that other place. So then... So everyone should just do what they do best.
So we should not worry too much about.
No, but we shouldn't make it that it's a standard that now everyone has to do in the yoga studios. Right? If someone can, let's say someone's doing college preaching, you shouldn't stop that for the yoga preaching, just because there's more volume. Because if you go to the yoga club on the university campus, it's generally a mix of men and women.
Yeah.
Like that. But if you go to the outside public ones, you know, especially the more high-end ones, then the higher end it gets, the more it's just ladies.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, so what I feel upset is, you know, like, you, now we, like, preach to yoga group, or we preach into, you know, cooking club, you know, so whatever we get is the woman, the ladies.
No, that's there. Because the point is if the ladies are involved, then if they like it, then they'll cook prasad at their house. That'll influence the husband. Yeah. They'll try to get the children to, as much as they can, you know, that their husband doesn't get annoyed, get them involved and like that. So it does have a good effect socially, that it does have a strong effect like that. But the point is that you should try to expand on so that you get a wider range. Right, because as we see is that from young to old and from, you know, men, women, all different demographics, all different countries, everybody can appreciate Krishna consciousness. So we should try to get as wide as possible. Is that okay?
Yeah.
But those who are good at it, what's the problem? As long as they're giving Krishna consciousness and they're all chanting and all that, but if they're all just sitting around doing om and then tying themselves up like a pretzel, then, you know, the guy with the beard from India can do that also. So it's no glory. You know what I'm saying? But if they're chanting, they're reading Prabhupada's books, they're practicing Krishna consciousness, then it's great.
Yeah.
What you see too with the yoga preaching is that you have this group that's already, they're already warm, you know, because they're already interested in the customs of chanting and meditation and kirtan. But, and so you have people coming based on that, but it's, there are actually very few who are taking up the process seriously. So you're getting the numbers, but you're not actually getting so many that are very serious.
Sure.
Whereas if you had like a smaller niche kind of group, you'd probably in the end up with the same number of devotees.
Yes, and you'd probably end up with those who are more willing to take part in the broader process. Because the weakness of coming from yoga backgrounds, they like to stick to the new agey kind of things.
Trapped in the mode of goodness.
Yeah, and so then they have a little trouble with pure goodness and with regulations outside of yoga and stuff like that, you know. Because the yoga will be defined by the modern concept of yoga. So what modern yoga says is good food, not what the actual yoga system says. You know, it's just like the modern yogis will probably avoid ghee. But the traditional yogis, then they know that that's the only thing that actually develops the ojas in the body. But because the modern are not, they're not worried about retaining ojas, they're more worried about losing it. So then the problem is you can't lose your ojas if you don't have the twiggy look, you know. So therefore, then it's considered bad. So therefore, olive oil and those things will be better because the olive oil will increase lust. While ghee will reduce lust, and so that's going in the opposite direction of why you're doing yoga. Right? So there's some underlying things. Now, if you can get through that, like you said, there'll only be a handful that actually will come to that point and be very serious. But otherwise, other places where I've seen that they use the yoga medium And they do quite well. They become quite serious. But I see that they also struggle with giving up their attachment to that kind of modern New Age yoga and those kind of values like that. So it's the culture is harder for them to accept. It means New Age is in between. But then, you know, so
there's so many devotees too that you see that are still very into the New Age, you know, kind of hippie realm. And,
yeah.
At least in the younger generations.
Well, I mean, just it means that's the background they come from. Just like those who joined who were hippies, then they, you know, they would talk and value things like hippies. And just they get older and don't have long hair. Yeah. So the conditioning will remain. That's why you just preach and look for those who are interested in pure devotional service. So whatever the background, that conditioning, then they're willing to engage that in Krishna service and slowly move to adjust it to what is the most appropriate. Like that. But otherwise, if you target that one group and do everything like that group, you know, means how you say your preaching program's done in leotards, then it's going to come out a different flavor than if you do it in the Vaishnav kind of mood and attire. They'll say, "Oh, but that's not yoga. But we're the actual original yogis. It's yogis who can't make it with focusing on the Lord, then focus on the Lord only for the material benefits, and that. So there are lower grade of yogis." But somehow or another, because of materialism, they're considered the better yogis. But we're bhakti yoga. I mean, so it's like, you know, it's like, you ask anybody, what do you do? Yoga. Then what kind of yoga? And then you say bhakti yoga, and you go into that. Or if they say, oh, so you do all the, you know, headstand. No, we do bhakti yoga. It's about, so people will know what yoga is, and then you talk about bhakti. But if it's yoga and you only talk about yoga, then that yoga-ing with what? That's the question.
Is that, this is a side question. Is Indians cooking on oil instead of ghee also some kind of more recent development?
Yes, when that whole thing that America came out with about the cholesterol, the first cholesterol scare, whenever that was, I think in the 90s or early 90s or late 80s, something like that, a big whole thing, and how milk is bad for you and this and that, then means I noticed it with the Marwaris, then they switched from always cooking everything in ghee. They wouldn't cook in anything else unless it's a special prep that you cook in mustard oil or something. Then they switched to peanut oil.
I've had several Indian ladies, but older ones, they press a surprise for how what I cook, that I cook on ghee and how I can digest it, because they are going on oil.
Yeah, and you just tell them that's what God, why God made chilies, you know, and ginger and black pepper is to digest ghee. Like that. Yeah, in the heavenly planets, they won't eat oil. Mm-hmm. Even if you bring the best extra virgin, this, that, they won't eat it. They'll only eat ghee.
They definitely don't eat pasta.
Yeah, or at least you could say they don't have salads, right?
Yeah.
That they're probably not doing, you know.
It's a proof.
Yeah, that's proof. That's proof. Like that. So, that became the big thing back in that, like that, in the 90s. They switched to that. Then when in America they figured out that it's because of the homogenization, that breaks down the fat globules and then it goes through the stomach wall directly into the bloodstream instead of going through the digestion process. Then it was that it's not the milk that's causing it, it's how they're dealing with the milk. But somehow or another, it didn't, reduce the bad reputation of milk. You know? So that's the thing, is nowadays it's just the popular thing. You want to be popular, you have to make some comment about butter or things and that, and about the glory of oil and stuff like that. So it's just modern. They don't know what they're talking about, because oil increases lust, while ghee increases, you know, the intelligence, the ojas, the sense control, all these different things. You know. So it just depends upon what you're into. Now, Italians, what are they known for? Being that peaceful, everything like that? No. Okay, so I rest my case.
He is both, not in the same breath though, in two breaths. It neutralizes the effect. Usually that.
Well, if you go into French cooking, they'll put some oil, because they cook everything in butter. But the problem is if you want to fry something in the pan, the butter burns, so you put a little bit of olive oil so that it won't do that. You could also put ghee. Point is there has to be some kind of oily thing in there other than butter so that the butter doesn't burn. So in that way you can mix it. Or you could just use ghee. If it's both, yeah, it would be less. Because it's just volume. You take more, it creates more problem. You take less, it creates less problem. It's not that it's a problem that you can't take it. It's just a matter of, especially if it's some specific health thingies or this or that. But that doesn't mean we avoid it. This whole idea that ghee is bad, that's not an appropriate mentality, because it's actually good. It's just, you know, it's like in the West, and they'll mention things about what's good about this thing. And they'll have two or three things about it, maybe sometimes four or five. But in the Ayurvedic, and that the glories of a particular thing that's used in Indian cooking, it takes up a whole page of what it does. And with time, they start to find more and more of the, you know, Indian stuff. Like now, turmeric's considered a good thing, something you should use, and this and that. Though they have no idea what to do with it. But in any case, but you know, it's one of those things that you have to use because it's good. So, you know, give them another 100 years and they'll figure out that cumin and all those things are good also. You know?
Maharaj, the ghee, I try to eat ghee, but it makes my fat very fast.
It makes you fat.
I mean, fat. One becomes fat if you eat ghee.
No, if he sits around, he gets fat.
The amount of ghee,
so. Which ghee also matters. What is the cost of the ghee?
Oh, I see. How much you use?
What type of ghee we are taking? Because best ghee, it costs like 1,000 rupees. You get in Kolkata 300 rupees also per kg.
That's another thing. So use less. Or work more.
Maybe.
That's a long way away from the divine couple's footprints.
Yeah.
I say, like you said, some entertainment. Okay. Krishna. Okay, is that work? Okay. Good. Yeah. Also, do you use chili?
No, I don't eat chili much.
So if you put ghee, you got to put some chili.
Oh, yeah.
Not so much as hot, but it's some. Or some ginger, or some Szechuan pepper.
Yeah.
Something you have to put in there. But if you just take the ghee on its own, then that may be more of a problem.
Yeah.
Try that.
Okay.
Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, the disappearance of our footprints gives more sorrow than seeing the footprints. It makes our life heirs disappear. The Vipaksha groups such as Chandravali speak with this intent, responding to Lalita's instruction not to lament mentioned in the commentary of the previous verse. Right? So Lalita is saying, oh, how glorious it is, it's special, and she must be so, you know, important, and what great piety. But then these ones are saying, but then it makes us feel even worse. Here, Krishna's footprints have become more prominent in the earth. though not married to her. In this forest, Krishna has treated her as if he were his bride, and is wandering about with an extra burden like a householder with his family. Because he has given us up, who are filled with genuine love, we can understand that Krishna is just filled with lust, not sincere love, right? Because otherwise, why would he gone off? We have such sincere love, he would have stayed with us, that he went off, then that means that it must be lust, right? Because it can't be that this gopi actually has more love. Being overcome with lust, he has carried this lusty woman. Otherwise, how could the son of the king of Braja, so handsome, become the carrier of a cowherd woman? Right? Even though they wouldn't mind being carried around, but hey. The Shaki spoke, here he has put her down, being the most clever, with mind intent on decorating her hair. Krishna has put her down in order to gather flowers. The Ashoka tree, being touched by her foot, has sprung into blossom. Then he thought that he would decorate Radha with those flowers. So when he put her down, then when her foot touched the tree, you know, then, you know, because all the roots come out and that by touching, then it went into, you know, into ecstasy, so it gives flowers. And then Krishna thought he will decorate her with these flowers. Right? So then you have him standing on his toes, that the favorable group pointed out like that. The gopis continued, certainly Krishna sat down here with his girlfriend to arrange her hair. The lusty boy must have made a crown for that lusty girl out of the flowers he had collected. Footnote 21. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 28 to 33 to Bhagavad Arkamrita-mala, chapter 20, entitled The Sweetness of Rasa, Rasa Madhurima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So just that great love and that is coming out in all these variety of ways. The aspect of the sweetness is there. Right? So even though it's a different flavor, still it's based on that affection for Krishna. So they're making these comments in this way. And this will bring pleasure to Krishna. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. On seeing a discarded broken chaplet on the ground, the opposing group speaks. The goal of dressing her hair is stated, out of lust, kamina. He has dressed the hair of a lusty woman. He has done this only for taking pleasure in amorous flirting. Seeing their sitting place, the friends then speak. He sat here making a chaplet for her from the flowers. The gopis had often seen such decorations made by him and thus recognized it. So a chaplet is like a something on the head, or must be something, but it's not too big because it's a chaplet rather than a...
Therefore, maybe chaplet should be crowned.
Okay, crown. Okay.
It's somewhat unusual because Pratipaksha group usually very submissive kind of mood.
They're submissive to Krishna. Doesn't mean they're submissive to anybody else.
Yes, but then in the beginning they were upset with the Swapaksha, but now they're also upset with Krishna himself. Calling him names and like that.
No, they're upset with the girl, but they say all this because, see, as if it's like this. If he, or this is some aspect of it's like this. If he actually went off with her because he has more affection for her because she has greater love for him, what's their position?
Less.
Yeah. But if it's that he somehow or another, this lusty woman has overwhelmed him, and therefore in lust he's gone off and this and that, then it still maintains their position of their affection for Krishna. So it's just it's just a method to make to keep their relationship in balance. Like, you know, so in other words, somebody has to be blamed. So it's not going to be them, and it can't be Krishna. So therefore, then the, you know, third party gets the. Okay. Verses 34 to 39. Krishna's private interaction with Srimati Radharani. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Lord Krishna enjoyed with that gopi, although he enjoys only within, being self-satisfied and complete in himself. Thus, by contrast, he showed the wretchedness of ordinary lusty men and hard-hearted women. Yes, so, yeah, he shows the By contrast, yes. So just the ordinary lusty men, they're involved because of themselves. They're not atmarama, so it's not about the relationship. Hard-hearted women, that they'll deal as if it is a relationship, though it's just about themselves. So in this case, both, you know, this is the meaning of the cheaters and cheated. They're both cheating each other, and they're both being cheated. Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, though he was satisfied with himself, he enjoyed. He no longer was satisfied with himself. This was stated previously. It is repeated for emphasis. This means he was satisfied with her. He enjoyed with her. He was controlled by her actions of vibhrama. Being conquered by her prema, he offered everything to her. It is not a fault for the Lord who is affectionate to his devotees and is controlled by the prema of the devotee. Rather, it is a great quality, manifested as the essence of his nature as Bhagavan. Because he being independent and being Atmarama, therefore, this being controlled by the devotees because of their prema. See what we talked about before, the contrast, you know, the ordinary lusty men and hard-hearted women, that in that case, then it's not about the love that the other person has. It's about what they want to get out of the relationship. So it's presented as affection, but actually it's affection because here's an opportunity I can get something. Does that make sense? Like I have my favorite restaurant. Why? Because things I like I can get from there. But if that restaurant changes the menu or changes the cook and it comes out different, that's not my favorite restaurant anymore. So it's not actually about the restaurant, it's about what I can get from the restaurant. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is he being Atmarama, there's nothing to gain. But he's reciprocating with that love for the devotee. And as it said before, if there's actual love, you actually control the person. So he's being controlled by the love. He's not being controlled by his own material needs. Right? He doesn't have. He's Atmarama. So it's simply, if he's controlled by Radharani, as opposed to all these millions of gopis, then, according to that formula, means this gopi loves him more than all these millions of gopis. That's why then he's with her and not with the others. Because she controls him because of the love, yes.
Another point could be that there's a general affection and there's specific. So people need both. Because some they get general.
Right.
You know, like this person, everybody likes him, but nobody in particular. And then he doesn't feel, you know, complete in himself.
Yes.
But then some people, certain people like them, but in general they have, you know, funny opinion.
Yes.
So then Krishna is getting both here, specific and general from...
Yes, because there's the general mood and there'll be the specific mood. But with Krishna, it's the love of the devotee that he's reciprocating, and in the material world, it's our own need that is dictating. You know, someone likes to be very social, so it's not specific, and someone likes to be very specific and not so social, or someone likes to be both. They have to be social, but at the same time as when the party's over, and they're sitting just with those who are close to them, then they're happy in that, because now, okay, the party's over, but they like the parties. So, but it's still their own. So that's what's his name? Sanatana Goswami then is bringing out, is that the contrast between these the materialist and Krishna is Krishna's only reciprocating what's there with the devotees. So if they're acting as a group, he reciprocates the group. You know, like with the wives of the Brahmins or the gopis as they came as a group. Then after that, he dealt with them individually. Then they became proud. Then he dealt with them as a group again. So it's just a matter of whatever's the mood, then he'll deal with that. So for Krishna, it'll always be based on he's self-satisfied, nothing to gain. But by interacting with the devotees, then he's controlled by that love that they have. But if it's not that love, he's not controlled.
So can we say that yayatamam pratipadyante works up to a certain level, and beyond that level, it's a different dimension? Because here we see it's not
it's not like that.
No, but it is. It is that as they surrender, he reciprocates. So we saw as they came, he was there, right? Because of their mood of affection, then he played the flute to reciprocate that. Then they came. Then he reciprocated according to their positions that they were on. Then as that surrender became more, then he interacted with them. But as the pride came up, then he reciprocated according to their pride. Because we have to remember is that the standard of what's surrender and not is defined by Krishna, not by us. So they felt they were very surrendered, but they were proud of that surrender. So to Krishna, that's not your best surrender. But they're still not in the same category as us. We become proud, but the point is this: there, if you remove the pride, they're on the topmost platform of the prema. We, for us, we remove the pride, then we're, you know, how you say, don't feel good about ourselves, you know. How you say? What's that?
Low
self-esteem and all that. So it's the pride that keeps us, you know, going and all that, you know. But with them, it's the love that keeps them going. And just it's one of the things that comes up. It's not that the pride isn't used in certain things, but the pride has to be centered on Krishna. You see, is these gopis, it was centered on themselves. Just like the favorable gopis, when they saw Radharani with Krishna, there's that pride. Hey, it's our leader who's there. And so that's nice, but the others then, it's not about them, it's about themselves. So then it doesn't have that same level of surrender. So it's still the same thing. Because we'll see when this pastime, I don't know if it'll come out now, Prema Sambhuta aspect here? No. So then, you know, we'll see it later when it comes up with Radharani. Then the whole point is he knew that if he, they're inimical to his Radharani, right? By what they're saying. It's directly obvious. Now, if they come upon the divine couple, right? Because they're looking for Krishna. So if they find Krishna with her, now what's going to happen to their envy?
Increase.
It'll just increase unlimitedly. And that's going to be bad because this is Radharani. He doesn't want to see that kind of happen. If he leaves at that moment, just when they come, and she's alone, and they're freaking out because of their attachment and their pain that they're feeling, and it's up to a particular level. But when Krishna leaves at that moment when they come, the pain she's feeling is so much greater than theirs. It's so obvious that they immediately then feel bad and come and try to support and... Because that's where then they learn their lesson. It's mentioned. The acharyas mentioned that. Yeah. So this is explained. It means the acharyas explained that. Radharani explains this. Like that. So the whole point is that's what's going on. Because he's trying to bring them up to that point to understand where how everything matches. Where's the fit? Where's the balance? And so only by that kind of arrangement, then it'll happen. So because there means if they hadn't become proud, then he'd stay with them and Radharani. But because they became proud, then he left them and went off with Radharani. But to curb that pride completely, then he leaves Radharani, and then they see actually what's separation. It's like you think you're feeling separation. This is what's separation. Right? And so then they have to appreciate that position. Does that make sense? So it's all according to as you surrender, he reciprocates. Like that. That doesn't change. It's just that the depth of it gets so much more, you know. We're dealing in change, and up there they're dealing in, you know, how you say, vaults of, you know, gold, you know, bars. You know, so it kind of changed. That way you could say it's different. Yeah. So, end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jayanitai Govardhana ki.